Good morning. This is the Subcommittee on Education. It's February 22nd, 2016.
I didn't wear my appropriate.
Well, we went back in history, back in time. We have two bills this morning. We're going to flip the agenda, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1537A. And Senator Gelzer, would you like to come forward and tell us a little bit of background on the bill? And then if Senator Roblin wants to help fill in on the amendments and anybody else that has information that will help us make a good decision.
Sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, and everybody else on the committee. For your record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Corvallis in Albany, which is Senate District 8. Senate Bill 1537 comes out of some work that we did in this room last July. It was July before we left. And we were instructed to put together a work group and come back with sideboards for something that's been known as a fifth-year program. So we had multiple meetings in Albany. We had superintendents travel from as far away as Klamath Falls and Redmond to participate in this work group. And what is before you in Senate Bill 1537 is that sideboard package. And what you will see that it does is in the very first year, it will reduce the number of kids that are participating, that are eligible to participate, from about 950 kids to about 127 students. One of the concerns that was raised about this as well is what happens if every district in the state participates. We now know that with these sideboards, if every student in the state participated, including from Beaverton and Portland, if they were eligible, it would be about 450 to 500 kids. So half what participated last year with 26 districts because of the sideboards. The sideboards are pretty clear. One, if you are eligible for the Oregon Promise, you cannot participate in a fifth-year program. Also, you must complete your FAFSA form, and if you are eligible for a grant that will cover your community college tuition, you are not eligible to participate as a postgraduate scholar. Postgraduate scholars will be limited to a single year of participation, and the districts can't just send them off. They have obligations as well. They must maintain their attendance at the college, their grade point average. They can only take certain types of courses, and the school district must hire appropriate FTE to ensure a one-on-one visit twice a month with each of their postgraduate scholars. Finally, if a school district chooses to participate in this program, we wanted to incentivize them to have more students earn college credits before the 12th grade. So the majority of students earning college credit on a community college campus cannot be a postgraduate scholar. So for every one of these fifth-year types of students, at least one 9th through 12th grade student has to be participating on a community college campus. That is not only an incentive, that is also a sideboard, because there are capacity issues related to the number of students that a community college will accept. Who you end up having left are the kids that really get left behind. Those that have less than a 2.5 grade point average, who tend to be in the districts that are doing this, that are least impacted by the sideboards, those kids who have previously dropped out of high school, the districts have gone back to pick them up and pull them back in because of the challenges they had as 9th and 10th graders. They can't get to that 2.5 GPA because they may be homeless or runaway or not have support from their families. They don't have the capacity to complete that FAFSA form to get access to the aid that they might need. So it really complements the Oregon Promise program very well. Finally, it creates a trigger. Because there's a weight in this, we will be able to track very precisely the number of kids that participate and how much it costs. The department is directed to come back to us in 2 years, in the fall of 2018, to tell us what those costs are and make recommendations about the appropriate permanent funding source for this, whether that would be the state school fund, if any, or a separate funding source, and kind of looking at number of kids, what would the costs be that are related to that. And I forgot to mention, they don't get the full credit moving forward. It drops from a 1 point kind of a full reimbursement to a 0.85 to a 0.75. These kids are not eligible for any additional weights, whether it's rural rates, special ed, poverty. It's just a single rate. And again, that's another of the sideboards. The amendment puts the appropriation in for the department to do the work related to collecting this information and establishing that weight so that we can have the data we need to make good decisions moving forward, and a clarification from HEC to make it clear that students have to accurately and timely fill out their Oregon Promise application.
Senator Roblin, any
The only thing I would add is that
one of the things that I felt was really important was to be able to really count and know them. So these kids will, from now, henceforth, they will not be 50 years. So I'd rather you not use that, because there are legitimate 50-year kids that we all know about who didn't finish in 4 years, and they need to continue so they can get their high school diploma.
Yep.
Those kids are not the kids we're talking about. And these kids are postgraduate scholars, and so we will have, as the department goes forward and with the allocation of money, we will know exactly who these kids are, exactly how many there are, and in the next number of years we'll figure out exactly what we need to do with, if we want to keep the program and pay it out of a different fund or keep it in the current place where we don't have any other extra costs. And I think it's a, since it's open to the entire state, those that feel like they can do it. My feeling now, with the requirement that they have to hire counselors, they have to do some other kind of stuff, this isn't going to be a money-making proposition for schools. It's going to be a commitment proposition that they want these kids to graduate. We heard a number of stories about school districts, one of which our good senator resides in Corvallis, where they have gone out and brought these kids back because they want to impact their graduation numbers. And they have. They're now at 92%. They were back in the low 80s, I think, at one
time.
High 70s.
High 60s.
High 60s? Okay. Yes. And it's because when you have a number of kids that really impact it, and they aren't even in school, you don't have any way to fix it by the time they get in there. But if you go out and find those kids and bring them back into the school and give them an education in some of the alternative schools that we have, also true in Eugene School District, also true in Jervis and these other places, all of those people came and talked about how this has impacted their ability to engage those kids back in and give them something to go forward to. Because a lot of these kids in community colleges are not going for degree programs. They're going for vocational programs and other things, certificate programs that are going to get them more than they had in high school and an ability to have a real job. So I think it's a great program. I think we need to look at it over the next couple of years to see if the funding is in the right place. But I think we now have it in place to do all that and to make sure that the costs don't grow back to where they were going.
Thank you. Senator, Co-Chair Monroe, did you have some comments for the record?
Yes, I do, for the record. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank Senator Gelser and Senator Roblin. They have made vast improvements in this program. The sideboards make sense. There's one issue that is not resolved yet that we will need to still work on, and that is for those students, postgraduate students, that are still in this program, they're being paid for out of the Common School Fund. And the Common School Fund, as we all know, is for K-12 education. Now, it's not tapping the Common School Fund to the degree that it was, not even close. And so that's a vast improvement. But at some point, we're going to need to have a conversation about how to fund this program for districts that want to continue it out of something other than the Common School Fund. That discussion is for another day. Not for today. And so we are going to go forward with this bill, and I'm sure that it will pass with vast improvement. It's critical, because of the time limit, it's critical that we pass a bill.
Yep.
And this bill is outstanding in that it solves almost all of the problems related to this, except for one.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So, Co-Chair Monroe, you support the bill? I was a little
yes.
fuzzy on that. No, I'm kidding. that was Monday morning humor.
Okay.
We already had that conversation while you were gone.
I know, and I was up in Senator Gelser's committee. She was down here in mine. And
Browns.
Yeah, but it's getting. I'm waiting for a text for
Huffman,
both of us to be able to go.
You either have a question or you don't.
Move it along. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, can we just have a little dialogue here? Would that be okay between the three of us, and you guys can listen in
for 5 minutes?
No, we don't need that long.
Okay.
So, is there a sunset or not? Is a sunset connected with the trigger for the research information, or
Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Huffman, sort of. There's a sunset on the entire bill, which kind of creates a backstop to tell the legislature we really need to come back. The reason that we don't sunset the program as a whole is that this is really about high school graduation. It's a high school graduation initiative. And if we were to sunset the bill in 2018 when we asked the department to come back with a recommendation, it wouldn't work. Because if you're going to a kid that's saying, I'm not going to come back to high school because I have absolutely no hope in my life because I right now have a 0.8 and I'm not going anyplace, you can't offer a carrot that has a sunset on it. So the way that the language is written, though, and I am fully committed, just as I was committed last year to come back and bring sideboards, this completely knocks out one of my school districts from participating because of the students that they are in. I will take this commitment very seriously to have that conversation if I happen to be here in 2019, to really look at what is the best way to pay for this that addresses the concerns that Senator Monroe has, that is equitable, and that also makes sure we're not leaving kids behind. These kids, I think, are the kids for whom education is absolutely transformational. I started this bill thinking about it as a sideboard bill. I'm leaving this bill feeling like it's a really good policy to pick up the very kids that we're leaving behind. And this is going to impact in the long run child welfare, TANF, all sorts of things, because these kids are going to have better lives because of this opportunity.
And I appreciate all the work that was done on it. The $82,000, that's for the department then for their part, and then the other portion comes out of the state school fund.
Correct.
Can you explain, you said postgraduate scholars,
okay,
kind of changing the name. Are they postgraduate? Or
yes, these kids are ones that are in alternative schools and have made the real switch. They have turned themselves around. They are making up extra credits by taking online stuff. They're doing a lot of different kinds of things so they can meet the graduation requirements, mm-hmm, in their 4 years. And it's saying those 6 years sometimes. I mean, but they're finishing their graduation. So once they graduate, they have another year in which we help them. Yeah, because some weren't around for 2 years. They finish their graduation, and that's the big goal of the whole thing. And then they get this next year with directed help to go on. I hope it coincides with what we're already doing. We took some money that we set aside in a SPA last session. We're putting it all into helping those kids be successful in the Oregon Promise program. I mean, as I look forward to seeing that going, it's the same idea. These kids, if they don't have somebody connected to their home school, probably aren't going to listen to the new counselor at the school because they just figured out school. And so we believe that having that close connection to their home school gives them a chance in that first year of community college to make the transition. We're trying to do some other stuff to make sure the transition for the Oregon Promise works better. We've seen some programs in Portland and with the community colleges up at PCC and others that have worked. Now we're trying to see, can we see some other kinds of things and find some other data to make sure we do that more. And maybe eventually we can just transition and we don't need this because that seamless transition is happening. I mean, that's been one of the big efforts we've made for years, is how do we get kids successful in high school to be successful in community college. Their non-completion rate, they don't call it dropouts, is very high. And in this program, the ones that they've followed, up to this point, it's been a 70% completion rate going to the second year. That's impressive when that's not happening otherwise. So we're not sure if it's going to be the same with this select group, but that's our hope, is to keep those numbers up and be a part of the solution to the problem that we've already noted with completion rates. So I think this is one of those that hopefully they'll be studying. We know we'll be studying it with respect to the finances in the department, but I hope that as we go forward, the money that's being spent on getting kids to complete at community colleges, we'll also look at this program as possibly part of the funding source, other kinds of things, as we go forward, because I think it has shown amazing promise in the school districts that have used it, albeit, thankfully, we got this new program called Oregon Promise, which alleviated a whole lot of the other pressures that we can do this one with.
Okay. Student population, I think I was hearing one estimate out of the department, but another one.
I think the old estimate from the department was the old program that they tried to get. This is going to be totally new. And, for example, one of the school districts, which she mentioned in her district, Albany, they had a 2.5 requirement to get into their program. So none of those. I think they will look at how can we serve some of these other kids, so there may be a few next year. But then they've got to balance all that kind of stuff with the other kinds of things. But most of the kids that were in it were those kids that Promise is going to take care of, and that's why the numbers are so much lower and why the estimate for all schools, if they have all these sideboards, is really small in comparison.
Okay, thank you. And I've been working with the Dells this past year, District 21, and I'm not exactly sure how this will play into that, but we're trying to repurpose some bonding money and get a local match and actually come up with a middle college kind of a concept, a hybrid between the high school and Columbia Gorge Community College. So some of the stuff that all of us are working on is really exciting.
It's true.
So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Doug, do you have a recommendation before we make a motion?
Madam Chair, our
work session.
We are in work session. You have an amendment. We recommend this amendment. It is a Ways and Means amendment, but came from both Senator Gelser and some suggestions from HEC, so that we generally don't give recommendations on bills, though, other than we need
just there, wanted to make sure
there
we
needs to be funding in the bill to make sure ODE is good.
And
right.
The only thing that I would add to that, Senator Roblin used the word spa. These students are not going to a spa. It's a special programs appropriation, and HEC is the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. So if they say the heck with the spa, we know what it means. Co-chairman.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the A13 amendments to House Bill, Senate Bill 1537A.
The motion is that the dash A13s be amended to Senate Bill 1537. Any discussion? Any objections? So done. So moved.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the amended Senate Bill 1537 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
The final motion for this bill is that Senator Monroe move Senate Bill 1537 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So moved.
Madam Co-Chair, I suggest that Senator Roblin carry this bill to the full Ways and Means Committee and Senator Gelser on the floor of the Senate.
And I'll carry it to the House floor, if that's all right with you, Senator Gelser.
And just on behalf of the school districts in the Mid-Valley, thank you very, very much for your flexibility and trust in us to get this right. I'm so grateful.
It will work.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1537A, and I'm going to open a work session on the federal grant authorization for the Early Comprehensive Childhood System Impact Grant. Megan, good morning.
Morning. Your jokes this morning are cracking me up back there. So.
Oh, my dry humor.
I like a good pun. So, co-chairs Comp and Monroe, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Irwin, and I'm the Early Learning System Director for the Department of Education. And I'm here today to ask permission to apply for a five-year federal grant. It's about $2 million over the course of that time from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It's the Early Childhood Comprehensive Systems Grant. And this is a federal grant that does not require any state general fund match, and it focuses on early learning systems. It doesn't fund services, which I point out to you because that means that there will not be a service cliff at the end of the 5 years where I would have to come back and ask for state general fund to backfill that. Some background for you on this grant. Oregon has had it for a decade, and up until now it's resided within the Public Health Division at the Oregon Health Authority with my very capable colleague, Kate Wilcox, who's sitting back there. But this year, the focus of the federal grant has shifted, and the Early Learning Division and OHA leadership felt that it was really in line with the statutory intent that created the Early Learning Division as kind of the comprehensive place for coordination of early learning services to move the grant to our shop, given the changes that the feds are making to how it's constructed, while keeping really strong ties and partnership with our colleagues at the Public Health Division. Previously, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services made this grant available to over 40 states. For this new grant period, they'll be awarding to only 15 states, and they're increasing the funds that they're giving out. So if awarded, Oregon would receive up to $426,600 a year for 5 years. The aim of this grant is to is that within 5 years, the participating communities will show a 25% increase in baseline in age-appropriate developmental skills among their community's three-year-old children. And then the grant has 5 secondary aims that I think make it a particularly good fit for Oregon. One is to strengthen leadership and expertise in continuous quality improvement. The second aim is to achieve greater collective impact in the early childhood community, which is one of the principles that our hubs were founded around. To develop 2 generational approaches to integrate early childhood education and health services so that we can better serve children and their parents. To develop and adopt a core set of indicators to measure population level impact around developmental health and family well-being. This is work where Oregon's pretty far down the path through the work that we've done to develop our hub metrics, the metrics that the coordinated care organizations are responsible for. And then there was just finalized a body of work around a dashboard of measures to look at child and family well-being that's been jointly adopted by the Oregon Health Policy Board and the Early Learning Council. And then the 5th aim of this grant is to test innovative system change ideas and spread strategies for making them more effective. I really like having that as an aim for a federal grant. I think a lot of the system coordination that we're trying to do in the state requires more research and development than we've had the chance to do. And I like the idea of using federal funds that are specifically designated for that type of activity to do that R&D rather than state general fund that needs to go to services. Our grant proposal will focus on working with 2 hubs, the Yamhill Early Learning Hub and Lynn Benton Lincoln Early Learning Hubs. And we'll focus on mapping service pathways for children who are experiencing social emotional delays and need some support but don't qualify as special education. And for mothers who are experiencing pre and postnatal depression. I can go into the reasons why if the committee would like me to, but Doug asked me to be brief, and I'm trying to learn how to be brief. So I will do that if you want me to tell you. The grant application will request that approximately 60% of the funds will be used as grant and aid to these 2 early learning hubs, with the remaining 40% to use for staffing the grant, and then there's some required travel that we and our local partners would have to do, and we want to hold back travel dollars for that. If we receive the grant, I'll be back requesting both funding limitation and position authority for 1 limited duration position to staff the grant out of our office. And we'll come back at an interim session to ask for that if we're awarded the grant. Like I said, we believe this will allow us to do some necessary research and development to figure out how to actually better use the state general funds that we have set aside for system coordination through the early learning hubs right now. We think that we'll be able to develop a model for what true family resource management can look like and then spread that through the hub network after we do some learning with this grant, which will let us use funds that are already in the system for this purpose even better than they're currently being used. Which I think is important as we head into the 17-19 legislative session, where I think we're going to be asked to show how we're using every dollar that we have in general fund as effectively as possible. So thank you for your consideration. I'm happy to take questions, and thank you, hopefully, for your approval for us to submit this application.
Thank you, Megan. Any questions for Megan?
So, Madam Co-Chair, do we need a recommendation from Doug, or do we just need a motion, or what do we need?
Well, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Okay. And Megan, I see that there's a March 15th deadline, and you're prepared to meet that deadline?
Yes. We knew that we needed to ask for permission, but we also knew that if we got permission, we needed to be ready. So we've been doing work on the proposal for the last 3 weeks.
And how did you choose the Yamhill and Lincoln county hubs?
Co-chair, comp members of the committee, we selected those 2 hubs based on a couple of factors. The number one thing that we looked at was whether or not this type of work that the grant asks us to do is in the plan. I didn't want to go and ask hubs to partner with us on something and have it be completely new and have them hustling to start something from scratch when they're already so busy. So both Yamhill and Lynn Benton Lincoln already had written into their own strategic plans to do this kind of work. and have local resources invested. In fact, this is really cool. I just want to say it on the record. Lynn Benton Lincoln's CCO has given them a gift of $300,000 to do work exactly like this. So it will help sort of leverage the investment the CCO is making with federal dollars.
Okay. And no pun intended, but when I saw ELD throughout the your letter and request, I was thinking English language development. It's just like too many acronyms in the education world. But
true, it's alphabet soup.
Yeah, it is truly. I mean, we need a lexicon just for all of our acronyms, and then we'd find out that there are a number of duplicates, but that's okay. And Doug, recommendation on this grant?
Madam Chair, I think it's appropriate to ask our BAM analyst, or the CFO analyst first on the recommendation. Oh, maybe not. Excuse me.
She's saying okay. Not this morning.
I guess not. LFO does recommend the approval of this federal submission and to provide authority to the department to apply for the grant.
Thank you, Doug. And, okay, Mr. Co-Chair.
And that's my motion.
Okay, the motion is to approve the ODE, Oregon Department of Education, to apply for a five-year federal grant up to $2,133,000 from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for the Early Comprehensive Childhood System Impact. Any discussion or questions? Any objections? So moved. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you all.
You will need a carrier only in full for this.
We only need a carrier in full. Co-Chair Monroe.
I'd be happy to do it.
That'd be wonderful. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on the federal grant authorization, and we're going to get an update for Wednesday from Mr. Wilson, and then you guys can have an hour of wonderful time to go check on any of the last of your bills.
Madam Chair, there are three bills at this time scheduled. House Bill 4076, which was Representative Johnson's bill that he mentioned or talked about a couple weeks ago, dealing with the Oregon Promise and some support services funding. 4002, which is dealing with absenteeism. And then House Bill 4086, which has nothing to do with education, but because of workload issues, it was transferred to this subcommittee. It deals with UI benefits, unemployment insurance benefits.
Thank you. I know in our
Taylor's here.
Our general government sub, we're having a range of different things that sometimes came to the education committee, so it's a back and forth supporting one committee over another, right, Mr. Wilson?
Yes, it is.
Helping everybody out. Anything else for the good of the order? Senator Robert.
Yeah, just a really quick one on our grant that we got for early learning. You know, the Lincoln County has been able to work with these other counties, and their school district is the whole county, which is a kind of a rare thing. So it really kind of is nice to have that looked at as we're talking about how they coordinate with other people in that grant. So I was pleased to see that happening. And it's been, it's interesting to go to see a countywide school district in this mix.
Well, and Senator, since your district encompasses what?
All of Lincoln County and part of one of the Yamhill County.
Two-thirds of the Oregon coastline. So.
Anyway, it's kind of nice.
And I don't think I heard Mr. Wilson say this, but I believe Wednesday will be our last meeting.
Uh-huh. Of this session.
Of the 2016 regular session. So I thank all of you already. I know Co-Chair Monroe will have the gavel on Wednesday, and so, but great appreciation for all the work that we're doing. And with that, we are adjourned.